ജയം വിഷ്ണുപാദ് പരമഹംസ പ്രിയരാജകാചാര്യ അസ്തുത്ര സത്യ ശിഷ്മാര ദ്വൈംഗൈശ്ലേ എ സി ഭക്തവരന്ത സ്വാമി ശുദ്ധ ഭാവഭാരി കീ ജയ ജയം വിഷ്ണുപാദ് പരമഹംസ പ്രിയരാജകാചാര്യ അസ്തുത്ര സത്യ ശിഷ്മാര ദ്വൈംഗൈശ് ശ്രീ ഭക്തി സിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജ കീ ജയ പ്രേംസകോ ശ്രീ കൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീദ്വൈത ഗദാധര ശ്രീവാസരി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദ കീ ജയ ജയ ഗോഡ് പ്രമനന്ദ ഹരി ഹരി ബോ All glory to Sambhu Devotee, Hare Krishna. All glory to Sambhu Devotee, Hare Krishna. All glory to Sambhu Devotee, Hare Krishna. All glory to the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna. Smishmada Bhakti Kalanta Swami Nityananda Namaste Saraswati Devi. Guru Vrishanya Nivishasya Shunya Varikas Chaitanya Sthane. So today we'll be speaking from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 1. Text 49 through 50, and also we'll be doing text 51 as well. Okay, so we're just going to be chanting text 49 together. Pradaye mrityave putran mochaye kripanam imam sutame yadi jayeran മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിയതേ ചേത് പ്രണയാമൃത്യവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണമിമം സുതാമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിതേ ചേത് പ്രണയേ മൃത്യവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണം ഇമം സുതാമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിതേയ ചേത് പ്രഭുജീസ് പ്രണയ മൃത്യവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണം ഇമം സുതാമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിയേത ചേത് പ്രണയേ മൃത്യവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണം ഇമം സുതാമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിയേത ചേത് പ്രണയേ മൃത്രവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണം ഇമം സുതാമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിയേത ചേത് മാതാജീസ് പ്രണയ മൃത്യവേ പുത്രൻ മോചയേ കൃപണം ഇമം സുതമേ യദി ജായേരൻ മൃത്യുർവാനാമ്രിയേത ചേത് ഓക്കേ ഓ റീഡ് ടെക്സ്റ്റ് 50 വിപാര്യയോ വാക്യം നാസ്യാത് ഗതിർധാതുർദുരന്ത്യയാ ഉപാസ്ഥിതോ നിവാർത്തേത നിവൃത്ത പുനരാപതേത് ഇൻ ദ വേർഡ് ഫോർ വേർഡ് മീനിംഗ്സ് പ്ലീസ് റീഡ് ആഫ്റ്റർ മീ പ്രണയ പ്രോമിസിംഗ് ടു ഡെലിവർ മൃത്യവേ unto Kamsa, who is death personified, for Devaki. Putran, my sons, Mochaye, I am releasing her from imminent danger. Kripanam, innocent, Imam, Devaki. Sutaha, sons, Me, my, Yadi, whether, Jayeran, should take birth, Mrityuhu, Kamsa, Va, or, not. Mriyate, should die, Chit, if, Viparyaya, just the opposite, Va, or, Kim, whether na, not, syat, it may happen. Gatihi, the movement. Dhatuhu, of providence. Duratyaya, very difficult to understand. Upasthitaha, that which is presently obtained. Nivarteta, may stop. Nivritaha, Devaki's death, being stopped. Punaha, apatit, in the future, it may happen again. But what can I do? Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Vasudev considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or, since he is already destined to die at the hands of my sons, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Please repeat after me. Vasudev considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. Or, since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Purport. Vasudev wanted to save the life of Devaki by promising to deliver his sons to Kamsa. Quote unquote, in the future, he thought, Kamsa may die or I may not beget any sons. Even if a son is born and I deliver him to Kamsa, Kamsa may die at his hands, for by providence, anything could happen. It is very difficult to understand how things are managed by providence. Thus, Vasudev decided that if he would promise to deliver his sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save Devaki from the imminent danger of death. Now, I'll briefly read, text 51. Agner yata dadu viyoga yoga yor adrishtato nyan na nimittam asti evam hi jantur api dur vibhavyaha sharira sangyoga viyoga hetuhu. When a fire for some unseen reason leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. Purport. When there is a fire in a village, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there is a forest fire, the fire sometimes jumps over one tree and catches another. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, whereas a tree or house in a distant place did. But actually, the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge, and therefore one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by supreme providence. Om Agyandhi Midandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshudun Meditam Yinatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamai Ham Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shigura Shyuta Padakamalam Shrigurun Vaishnavamscha Shridupam Sagrajatam Sahaganarangadatan Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahaganalalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Kuruna Sando Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaudangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sthite Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpadudu Vyashcha Kripa Sindhu Vya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Gradhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we see it this pastime. Vasudeva is such a wonderful personality. Vasudeva and Devaki are pure devotees of Krishna. In fact, this is the third time Krishna has become their child. Previously, Vasudeva and Devaki were known as Prishni and Sutapa, right? And so they were Prajapatis who performed extreme austerities in order to have Krishna as their child. In fact, they're pure devotees. What's that? Oh. They're pure devotees who, they're Prajapatis, they're pure devotees. They had unalloyed love for Krishna. And therefore, their greatest desire was to have Krishna as their child. So they performed these tremendous austerities. Krishna appeared to them. He became Prishni Garbha and instructed them in transcendental science. He also appeared again as their child. They were Kashyap and Aditi. And so he appeared as their child, Vamanadeva. So again, he is now appearing as their child, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna. So it's amazing, if you look at their consciousness, they have nothing but unalloyed love for Krishna. They don't want anything except to serve Krishna. And they're happy to tolerate any circumstance for Krishna's pleasure. In fact, as usual with pure devotees, they don't even desire liberation. It's very interesting. Krishna actually kept them in the material world for three different births because Krishna wanted to appear as their child. He wanted them to assist and facilitate his pastimes. So they're so pure that they don't even want liberation. They're happy to actually stay in this world in order that Krishna can be their child and they can assist in his pastimes. And even within those pastimes, we see that it's not always roses. There's actually very difficult circumstances which they, as a couple, are confronted with. Now, the amazing thing, if you just look at this pastime in particular, that look at the horrible situation of the world in which Krishna is taking birth. That, first of all, the demons have overwhelmed the world, so much so that the demigods have prayed and asked Krishna to send to take care of the situation. But the situation is so horrific and so monstrous that before Krishna has even taken birth, the demons are trying to kill his mother. I mean, think about that for a second. Look at the chaos of the situation in which Krishna is taking birth, in which all these devotees are taking birth, in which this pastime is about to take place. That it's a world full of demons, and their behavior is just horrible and atrocious, so much so that Devaki, on her wedding day, is being grabbed by her hair and a sword put to her throat. Right? So the devotees are all taking birth to perform their service in this particular circumstance. And of course, there is a silver lining because Krishna, the great hero, is about to take birth. He's actually going to descend into this horrible situation. He's going to make it all right. And the amazing thing about this pastime, if you look very closely, the devotees suffer so much tribulation and so much difficulty preparing the way for Krishna. And yet they tolerate that difficulty. They see it as a service to Krishna. They feel ecstasy in performing this tremendous sacrifice. And then ultimately, they're fully confident that when Krishna appears, he'll set everything right. So there's this amazing consciousness which the devotees have. Now, in these two purports today, excuse me, Prabhupada is really bringing out a certain subtle concept, which he calls here providence or destiny. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it's generally it's a translation of the word daiva. And so I wanted to talk a little bit today about what daiva is, or what providence and destiny are.
I also wanted to talk a little bit about the attitude that Vaishnavas have towards destiny or providence. There's a certain, we have to really understand this principle of providence, and we have to include it in how we approach life. It's an important sort of tool or instrument and understanding in Krishna consciousness that we have to keep with us. We always have to try to hold this perspective in our mind as we approach the various difficulties in our life. So providence, the dictionary definition is literally God conceived as the power sustaining and guiding human destiny. So even the karmis get it right. It's pretty amazing. And generally, what it refers to, I mean, there's a sense in which it's power beyond your control. Right? In Vedic culture, the devotees, the different individuals, they recognize that there is power beyond your control. And you're really helpless to defy it. You're subjected to it beyond your ability to resist. And so this really is taking place on multiple levels. In one sense, it can refer to just your karma. You know, you're subjected to the law of karma. This is generally how Prabhupada defines it. But even more than that, there's the sense of Krishna's hand behind your karma. Krishna is actually, especially for devotees, Krishna is working in your life and utilizing your karma, which you're powerless to resist. You're subjected to it. There's nothing you can do about it. These experiences in life will take control of you and bulldoze over you. You can't stop it. You just have to develop the right attitude as you deal with it. Right? And the right attitude is first to understand it's one's karma, and then to try to see Krishna's hand behind that karma. Try to see how Krishna is working through this particular circumstance. And then ultimately, Daiva means the will of Krishna himself, right? The desires of Krishna. Why is it that karma is so powerful? Why is it that we can't resist this power? Because ultimately Krishna is behind it. It's his hand, and his hand is unstoppable. There's nothing you can do to resist the will of Krishna. As tiny infinitesimal jivas, we're fully under his dominance and power. And so that usually manifests in our lives as being sort of crushed by our karma. Right? So, and there's a beautiful verse in the Bhagavatam, a very famous verse, where Prabhupada kind of defines what this daiva means in general. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Karmana Daivane Trena, Jantu Deo Papadite Taye, Striya Pravishtu Udaram, Pumso Reta Kanashrayaha. The personality of Godhead said, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and according to the result of his work, the living entity, the soul, is made to enter into the womb of a woman through the particle of male semen to assume a particular type of body. So Karmana Daiva Netrena, it's the supervision of Krishna. It's his power, his will behind the law of karma, which we're subjected to. Okay? So there's these two different, might say, aspects of Daiva. Now, how does the devotee look at this? We already mentioned that the devotee understands, you know, Krishna's hand behind it. But what we see in this verse and purport is a very interesting, you might say, attitude that Vasudeva has. It's one of humility and sort of resignation to fate. Vasudeva, he recognizes his limitations. In fact, here he is confronted with this very dangerous circumstance. He only has a split second to think. He's really engaging his intelligence to the highest degree here. He has a moment to save Devaki's life. And in that moment, he's thinking of so many different things. And these verses are giving us a view into his intelligence. He's giving us a view into what is his attitude. And how does he see the world? What does he consider to be important when weighing this very important decision about how to deal with this circumstance, right? And so we see that he recognizes Daiva. He sees that there's providence is working, and he understands that he is not able to understand it, right? There's a sense in which a devotee, he views reality as he cannot understand Krishna's will. He cannot predict it. He can't speculate about it. He more or less just has to accept it, right? He's prepared to do his duty. He's thinking of how to do his duty. He's thinking to how to save Devaki. It's not that he's just sitting back and saying, you know, it's all Krishna's will, Kamsa, do what you want, you know. If you need to cut, then cut, you know, I'm just surrendered to Krishna. No, he's actually putting forward tremendous effort. He's trying to do his duty. He's trying to do the right thing. But he immediately, what enters into his mind is his own smallness, his own inability to understand the greater picture. You see? So he's a pure devotee of Krishna. This is someone who has taken birth many, many times, performing unalloyed service to Krishna. He has no desire for anything but to please Krishna. And the first thing that weighs into his decision-making is, I'm so small. I don't understand Krishna's will in this. I don't understand what plan he has. And therefore, I'm not going to speculate. Right? The tendency materially, I personally have some experience of this. I'm sure we all understand this, that we look at the world quite differently. We think of how can we, if a difficulty arises or a problem arises, we think of how can I grab it and try to control it. How can I take control of the situation? How can I dominate the situation? But the first thing that comes into Vasudeva's mind is, Krishna has some plan. I don't understand it. And I need to be humble here. I need to recognize my own limitations of my intelligence. I don't want to interfere or have the wrong attitude here because there's a greater plan happening. You see? So he's being careful here not to, you might say, do anything that will obstruct or interfere negatively with Krishna's plans. He's trying to have the right attitude. And therefore, he decides to only deal with the immediate situation, right? Which is that Devaki is under the immediate threat of death. Kamsa, he has his sword at her throat. And so he begins, as we'll see, to speak to Kamsa in various ways, even judging Kamsa's mentality correctly. It's very interesting that he tries to speak to him philosophically. It doesn't really work. But he begins to speak to him in terms of, you're going to lose your reputation. Right? If people worship you, they appreciate you, you're seen as this great personality. If you do this, then people will think you're a disgusting, horrible person. They'll criticize you behind your back. Right? And this actually works. Kamsa decides, okay, I better not, just let it go for the moment. Right? And he rationalizes it in various ways. And this is actually a fact, because if you read ahead in the pastime, when Kamsa, he's actually prepared to kill Devaki again. Later, when Krishna is within her womb, what happens is that first of all, Vasudeva, he appears within Vasudeva's heart. He's transferred to the womb of Devaki, and Devaki becomes very, very beautiful. She becomes effulgent. She's shining. Everyone could see that something's going on here. Right? The Supreme Lord is manifest in her womb, and Kamsa is enraged. In fact, he's terrified. He can't stop thinking of how he's going to kill this child, or this child's going to kill him. Right? And he becomes obsessed. He's actually almost like a pure devotee. He's thinking of Krishna constantly, except it's unfavorably. It's in the wrong attitude. And so, and he wants to actually march into that prison cell and actually kill Devaki right there. But he won't because, again, he's thinking, my reputation will be tarnished. Right? She's a pregnant woman. She's my sister. She's in the prison house. I need to be very careful here. Not that he's above killing her, but he's just thinking of his own material benefit, right? So this is the nature of the demon. So you'll see that Kamsa, he has actually the exact opposite of the attitude of Vasudeva. Kamsa is determined to forcefully, with his sword, stab into this circumstance, right? In fact, I mean, if we look at ourselves, we could see sometimes, at least for me, this sort of mentality that the tendency when there's some situation, even we don't understand it, we just speculate about it, right? We just think it, we mull it over in our intelligence, we try to figure out the full picture in our mind, and we make plans how we're going to conquer the situation. And not only that, but a very materialistic person will do that in a very voracious, destructive way. Like Kamsa, he's thinking, the solution to all problems is just to cut it down. The solution to problems is just to be as brutal as possible. Isn't this the demonic mentality? This is the mentality in modern society, right? If there's any problem or any difficulty with another person, the solution is to be more brutal than they are, to actually be more horrifying and terrifying than they can imagine, and just cut them down with all the force in your power. And this is actually the solution to every problem, right? So he's trying to control the situation. He cares nothing for Daiva Netrena. He cares nothing for the will of the divine. He cares nothing for providence. He doesn't accept any authority over himself. He just has the will to dominate. Right? So, whereas we see the mentality, the Vaishnava is very different. If we look at the behavior of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, I've heard that he would always say, Krishna willing, after everything, isn't it? Whenever he'd be speaking to someone or he'd make some pronouncement as to a plan that was there, he'd always say, if Krishna desires it, or Krishna willing. Because this is the same attitude of Vasudeva. Right, that there's a sort of, you may make your plans, you may use your intelligence to figure out how to use Krishna's energy in his service, that in the nectar of instruction is called utsahan, enthusiasm, to see the whole world as Krishna's energy, and then to become voracious and trying to engage it in his service, isn't it? Prabhupada wanted us to be very intelligent, and to look at everything in the world and really, with a lot of energy and enthusiasm, see how can I use this in Krishna's service. Right? That's called enthusiasm. But there must be confidence there as well. There must be the sense that Avashya Rakshibe Krishna, Krishna will protect me. Krishna is in this circumstance as well. It's not just me. Right? Krishna is there, he has his plan, and he'll give me whatever I need to assist him in that plan. And so, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, this was his mentality as well. He's extremely powerful, extremely vigorous in trying to engage everything in Krishna's service. And yet, he always had the humility to say, Krishna willing. Right? He always had the humility to see that Krishna, the Daiva, is there. Krishna's will is there. And that must be taken into account. You can never forget that and just go it alone. Right? So it's interesting. Also, there's another attitude which Vaishnavas should also apply in such circumstances. We see this in the story of Suyajna, which is actually told by Hiranyakashipu. There was Yamaraj himself, when Suyajna, this king, was killed on the battlefield, and all of his wives and family members came out to the battlefield, and they were all lamenting. And then Yamaraj took the form of a little boy, and he came and instructed them. There's a whole section in the Bhagavatam where this is told. And Yamaraj is essentially giving them spiritual knowledge and telling them that because of providence, because of this Daiva, this is actually, you know, more powerful than you. There's nothing you can do to stop this. You have to actually learn from it. Right? And this, actually, I wanted to read a quote from Prabhupada. It's very beautiful, describing what we should learn from providence. Srila Prabhupada says, I think this is in a lecture, a Bhagavatam lecture, providence desires only the good. The living entity in this material world, due to the improper utilization of his will, he's in this material world. Because the living entity wants to enjoy this material world, God is so kind that he gives him facilities and directions. So is the super soul. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is there giving knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness. When a child wants to play in a certain way, he is guided by some nurse or servant hired by the parents. Our position is something like that. We have given up the company of God to come to this material world to enjoy ourselves. So God has allowed us to come here saying, all right, enjoy this experience. And when you understand that this material enjoyment is ultimately frustrating, you can come back. So it's interesting because Krishna is instructing us in multiple ways. He's instructing us through the Shastra. He instructs us through the Guru. He instructs us through the Sadhus. But then he's also indirectly instructing us through the material energy. And so we have to, not only do we have to see the will of Krishna behind our karma or behind the situations we face in life, but we also have to look at them from another perspective, which is to learn from them that material existence is frustrating. Right? All of us here, every single one of us in this room, will experience or is experiencing very difficult, frustrating situations. There's some heads nodding, right? You're not alone. Every single individual here is carrying a gigantic burden of pain and suffering. That's the nature of this world. All of us here have 1,000 pounds of suffering on our back, right? So we're all struggling like this. Now, we have to see the Krishna element, but we also have to look at it from a position that develops knowledge and detachment, jnana and vairagya. When a situation arises which is beyond our control and which causes tremendous amount of suffering, we have to see that this is the material energy is teaching us a lesson. And that lesson is you cannot be attached to anything. Right? The material world is temporary. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayapa rikta chetasam. So in our illusion, in our foolishness, we're trying to enjoy the material world, and yet it's frustrating us and telling us, no, this is not a source of enjoyment. It's just like if you see in Govindas, there's these, Madhugori makes these beautiful chocolate cakes. You have a German chocolate cake, right? Imagine if she decided to teach us all a lesson, and she made us cakes, but she put some kind of horrible, you know, like something that makes you vomit, right? Like Epicac or whatever it is, you know? And she put it in the cake, and every bite you take, you actually get sick, you fall on the ground, you grab your stomach, and you vomit, right? That's the nature of Maya, that we're eating this cake, and every bite we take, we occasionally have to just throw up, you know? And so this is Maya's way of telling us, don't eat the cake, you know? So this is another form of instruction that we have to take from Daiva, right? And of course, we see that eventually, now Vasudev, he had this, you know, he certainly as a pure devotee, he had this deeper understanding. But Vasudev even takes it deeper than that, as we'll see in coming chapters, that Vasudev, he's eventually thrown into prison. Another voice, or actually Narada Muni, comes and encourages Kamsa in order to hurry the appearance of Krishna. By the way, Kamsa refers to the voice from the sky as Daiva as well. So anyway, what happens is Kamsa basically goes nuts. He becomes like this horrible, monstrous personality. He begins persecuting Vaishnavas left and right. The Bhagavatam, the Krishna book, doesn't go into much detail about what he does, but he basically scatters the Yadu, the Bhoj, and the Andhika dynasties so that they're all living all throughout different kingdoms. And even Prabhupada mentions that they're living in caves. Now imagine if like the temple, if somebody was, you know, if the government or something was so horrific, they're actually attacking and beating and killing the Vaishnavas. So the Vaishnavas are actually living like in the Santa Monica Mountains and stuff, right? Imagine all of us here were like living up in the Hollywood Hills, eating roots and drinking, you know, like rainwater or something, right? That's how bad it was. And so, and even worse, that Vasudeva and Devaki were thrown in prison, and their six children, their six first children, were brutally massacred before their eyes by Kamsa himself, who was such a powerful demon that no one can resist him, even the gods. And so in this, in Vasudeva and Devaki were terrified, and yet they had the faith that for Krishna, because they could understand this Daiva on a deeper sense, is that Krishna is going to appear as their child. They understood that, you know, from the voice in the sky. That's what they got from it, right? Kamsa, he became very fearful, wanted to kill Krishna. They actually became very deeply devoted, realizing that Krishna is coming as our child. And so they took that to heart, and they were willing to tolerate this extremely difficult situation. I mean, can you imagine just for a moment putting yourself in their situation, being imprisoned, and how difficult it is for a husband and wife or parents to see not only their child. I've heard that one of the most difficult things in life is if your child dies before you, right? It's considered like a very, very painful situation, you know. But imagine seeing the child one after another killed before you as babies. Imagine how difficult it was for Devaki. And yet, their devotion to Krishna was so strong that they understood that in this suffering, we are preparing the way for Krishna to appear. You see? And they had faith that when Krishna comes, he's going to set everything right. And it's amazing because when Krishna finally appears, in fact, Vasudev, this pure Vaishnava, suffering in this terrible condition, tolerating, immediately he becomes, like at a certain point, he just became brilliantly enlightened from within. Like he just went into pure Krishna consciousness in the highest level imaginable, feeling spiritual ecstasy. Krishna had actually taken a seat in his heart. And then from there, Krishna moved into the womb of Devaki, and as we mentioned, she became brilliant, and everyone could understand the Supreme Lord was within her womb. And all of these brahmanas who were suffering, all the Vaishnavas living in caves, right? These brahmanas were forbidden from performing sacrifice, and they were miserable. They weren't, imagine if you weren't allowed to chant your japa or something. Then immediately, they became filled with pure consciousness. They became totally peaceful. And even nature itself became peaceful. All the birds and trees and everything like that. You could just feel the spiritual environment just, you know, like this pure spiritual energy just begin to saturate everything. And finally, Vasudev could understand he's here, right? The hero has come. Krishna has come. And even Kamsa can understand, you know, I'm dead. You know, this has finished. My foolish determination to go against Daiva has now been crushed, and there's nothing I can do. And that's a fact. There's nothing he could do. And then when, there's so many beautiful pastimes, but then when Krishna appears outside of the womb in this four-handed form, and he, you know, he tells them of their history and everything and kind of soothes them, and then he asks them to take him to Vrindavan. Of course, Mother Devaki, she feeds him first. She's thinking, it's amazing because even though he appears before them in a four-handed form, immediately they feel this Vatsalya Ras. It's actually stronger than their understanding that he's the Supreme Lord. So he assumes the baby form, which is very beautiful. Describes he has full head of hair and everything. And she immediately puts him to his breast, thinking that I have to feed him because he could get hungry on the way to Vrindavan, right? This is like four-armed Narayan was just standing before her, and she's thinking, I don't want him to be hungry, you know? So, you know, of course, Vasudev takes him upon his head and carries him to Vrindavan. And in a later meeting with Nanda Maharaj at Kurukshetra, you can see the attitude of Vasudev towards Nanda Baba. It's very beautiful that he sees Nanda Maharaj and he thinks, I'm so grateful for taking care of my son. Right? That was his feeling. There's no jealousy or anything. You know, look at all the austerity I did and now you get to raise my son. No, he was thinking, my son, you've done so much for us. Right? My beautiful little boy and, you know, myself and Devaki were so grateful for everything you've done for him. Right? So wonderful. And then, of course, we see that Krishna does make everything right. He fully satisfies Vasudev and Devaki. And in the end, he even travels to the abode of Bali and takes the six sons that were killed. They're actually great, describes in the Krishna book. They were six sons of the sage Marichi, and they had been cursed due to an offense to Brahma to become the sons of Hiranyakashipu, who then they were further driven to become, you might say, killed by their mother. They were born, all six of them were born specifically with the curse to be killed by their mother, or to be killed after birth as a baby. And so they were killed, and, you know, they're sort of driven down from this very high platform of being demigods into this kind of very low position of suffering. But because when they were brought back to Devaki, and they drank the breast milk of Devaki as babies, and that milk was considered the prasadam, because Krishna had drank in it, therefore, it describes they become self-realized souls, right? Not just demigods, but they become, you know, very advanced spiritual personalities. And then they were released from their curse and again took their position in the heavenly planets. So we see that on all levels, Krishna made this okay. He actually made this a wonderful experience for Vasudeva and Devaki. And so we can take inspiration and the attitude and the knowledge of Vasudev in these verses, that not only is he understand the all-powerful presence of Krishna working, his divine hand working in the situation, he understands that he's very humble and therefore he doesn't speculate or try to dominate. He merely deals with what he can accomplish at the moment and performing his duty. And then we also see in his consciousness this sense of total devotion and self-surrender and willingness to tolerate anything in the service of Krishna. I just want to end with one beautiful verse here from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which really nicely shows this consciousness. Tumara sevaya dukkha hoya jato se oto paramasukha seva sukha dukkha paramasampad nasaya avidya dukkha. Troubles encountered in your service shall be the cause of great happiness. For in your devotional service, joy and sorrow are equally great riches. both destroy the misery of ignorance. This is from Shradhanagati, the Atmanivedana section. So we see that Vasudeva and Devaki have this mood of Atmanivedana, that they accept whatever sorrows that are coming upon them and whatever joys as simply service to Krishna. And therefore they're willing to tolerate anything to give Krishna pleasure. And so we can see this is a tremendous and extremely deep expression of pure unalloyed devotion. And thank you very much. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu?
You know, you mentioned how after Krishna was born that Devaki wanted to feed Krishna. So where is that mentioned exactly?
Wanted to feed Krishna? It's mentioned in the Krishna book.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. All glories, Prabhupada.